Dave Hancock.
Dwayne Penfold.
So we have more than a quorum. We have five members, right? And you want to introduce the staff here?
Okay. For staff, Betty Mishu with Lane County Animal Services.
Michael Johns, General Services Manager.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks for coming.
And Chair, we have one person signed up for public comment.
Okay. Welcome, public comment. You have 30 minutes, Katie? No, 3 minutes. You can take.
Oh, I don't have any comment right now. I think we already addressed it. I wanted to be able to ask if my application had been received. So that's really, I just figured I had to put something.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, thank you. Are there any changes to the agenda of any kind?
Well, we can discuss things in open discussion. Like, I won't talk about importation.
Any other changes? Okay. Review or approve the audio minutes. Did anyone listen to them?
No.
Because without the real written minutes, it doesn't help much. But so we'll, I don't know what we'll do on that one.
Well, they don't have to be approved. Is that not correct? Right.
Okay. How do you get these minutes?
I've sent you the link to the minutes. But I will certainly send those to everyone again.
But you have to re-listen to the whole meeting, and those are the minutes, basically?
Mm-hmm. And it's consistent with county policy, so we are trying to stay consistent with how all the other advisory committees do it. And they all have gone to the audio recordings.
Well, the board did, too, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have.
I don't know. They used to have a highlight where they'd summarize a certain reference in the minutes. You know, do they do that in these minutes? So it's just bulk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, maybe the board could change that. You know?
We could only hope.
Yeah, maybe.
I know that's going to happen.
Well, I think pretty light and bored right now.
Use your influence.
Yeah. So old or continuing new business? Okay, let's go to the Harriet Smith Trust summary. And where is the summary?
So it's on the next page.
Okay.
So I'll direct your attention to the very bottom where it just says Harriet Ruby Smith Trust summary.
Okay, yeah.
So the 126 was your beginning balance. As you recall, there were some charges for the installation of wood panels at First Avenue, and there were also installation of air control kennel doors. So those two charges, $6,358 and $9,600, that is work that was already approved by this board, and the work was done by Greenhill on behalf of First Avenue. The $23,275, that was for additional specialized training and training supplies for First Avenue in support of shelter dogs. That money has not been spent. So even though it was approved by this board and approved by the Board of Commissioners, those funds have not been expended yet.
Because?
Because I believe that, Sasha, correct me if I'm wrong, but Molly has been here several times offering public comment, and she's a volunteer at First Avenue. And I think that she and Sasha had a conversation where Greenhill was able to address some of her concerns with the specialized trainer hours for First Avenue, and so I think that was kind of put in a holding pattern.
Yeah, we have hired a very part-time independent contractor who's KPD certified to come out and assess the needs of the shelter dogs, do some supportive training with the staff and the volunteers.
So Greenhill's paying for that? We're not paying for it? And you no longer need that help for subsidies for training?
Yeah, You know, I would say at this point, because we are we're moving into new facilities that are specifically designed for lower stress, for more room. We'll be open 7 days a week, so we anticipate that our length of stay will greatly reduce, and so the average stay of a shelter dog may be reduced. I'd love the opportunity to maybe reassess what specific behavioral and training needs are. I would say at least 6 months from now or so. We anticipate that we'll move and merge our locations by about July 1st. And then we anticipate that we'll keep the trainer, the independent contractor, with us during the move to still provide care for the dogs.
How many hours a week does she do?
She's 10 hours a month.
2.5 hours a week?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have dogs that abandoned dogs or dogs with behavioral issues that could benefit from more than 2.5 hours a week?
We
court holds or anything or behaviorally challenged dogs?
Yeah, so we do. Our population changes every day, though. So some weeks we have expanded need much more than 2.5 hours. Some weeks it's much less. We try to allocate her time so that she's not only the only person working with the individual animal, but she's working to set up a behavior plan with our canine program manager. They then disseminate the training techniques and the information that's designed specifically for each dog to the greater population. Some of our volunteers that have elevated to a higher level of dog enrichment training so that as in a real life situation, the animal is not dependent upon one person being able to utilize their new skills, but they have a team.
I would assume.
And you have more than that person, right? I mean, isn't there other trainers?
We do.
So,
yeah. I would say Laurel at Northwest Paws is the most consistent. She's contracted for 10 hours a month. And then as needed, we also work with Jen Bigland for the training spot. We work with Michaela Frank from Rockstar Dog Training.
And would I be wrong in assuming you have some volunteers that can help with that as well?
To some level, the mention of the court-ordered dogs, we do have some legal restrictions in terms of who's able to handle dogs that may be classified or by quarantine or whatnot. But certainly the average shelter dog that comes in isn't very socialized or have behavior skills. They come in as a stray. Their stay is elongated. We do have volunteers that have elevated their training.
So how many hours a month your three people you mentioned, how many hours a month are the total hours of, or does it fluctuate up and down?
It significantly fluctuates. We have a fairly low dog population in the winter, and they're coming up their ears in the summer, and that's a broad statement, but I can tell you that the transition between the dogs that we have over the last couple of months, we don't have a lot of longer length of stays, but that certainly has not been the case in the past, and we're not banking on that.
So do we need that 26,000 sitting there, or 23,000 sitting there? Should we put it back?
We may want to reconsider where that money goes.
Yes.
And you have the ability to do that. It's just that those funds have been approved. They don't go away.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just that it's already gone through the process of approval by recommendation by this board and approval by the Board of Commissioners. So I think it could be reallocated as you see fit.
Is there a way then to, since that approval is already done, that doesn't mean the money is spent. Is there something that we should actively do to reinstall it into her trust as opposed to having to...
Well, it is in there. It hasn't been removed.
I understand that. However, it can be removed by the basis of what we've already done to what appears to be unnecessary at this point.
Well, it could be reallocated to another... to other components of something that you approve or to another program. A program need, like the community vets have put together a list of needs, and that was part of the discussion that this board was going to have, is talking about their list of unmet needs. So I think I would have to check with downtown and ask legal how I would reallocate those funds. They've already been approved, and I was going to say it might just be a board note that these funds were approved, but now if that is a need that is no longer needing the whole $26,000, the board is recommending it be reallocated to this, this, and this. So I think it's just a procedural thing that I can figure out how to do.
Yeah, my question is just a wonk question. Would it be easier to move it back and allocate from there, or will it be complicated if we leave it allocated that way and want to redirect it later? It's just a wonk.
Just put it back into her trust without a direction.
I don't necessarily want to make it that much easier to just use those funds because they've already been allocated, okay? I'd rather we have to go through the same procedure all over again.
Exactly. I would have
cancel the board order.
Well, I would have to figure out how to. I'm sure it's possible. I would just need to put some kind of audit trail in place, saying this board had recommended, you know, these improvements or funds approved for this project, and I'm going to say if that need is no longer there, the board has elected to put it back into the general trust. I mean, it's still in the trust. I just have to have some kind of audit trail that says it's moved from this project to another project or back into the general trust where it's not where it hasn't been approved yet for use.
I apologize that I wasn't here when this initial conversation was taking place and the vote of confidence to allocate these funds was given. So thank you very much for that. I'm wondering if there's an expiration date on the funds in which they should be allocated.
I am not aware.
No, there's not.
I'm not aware of an expiration date.
If there's a possibility to keep them where they are.
No.
And extend the use by date.
No. I mean, if you don't need it and you don't use it, I don't see any reason to keep it.
Well, but I think
We were told that this was a dire need and animal was euthanized that could have been behaviorally addressed. I mean, that's what we were told, apparently.
That information was brought by Molly, who was a volunteer at First Avenue, because she volunteers and she saw the need. I don't think she had necessarily had the opportunity to sit down with Sasha. I think Sasha was able to address some of the concerns, but not all of them. And I think there kind of wasn't a time to reconsider what the needs may be as you move into the new facility, and there still may be a definite need for training hours or specialized training supplies.
I think we have lost the intent of what we were doing, okay, because we had a very specific thing that we were donating this money to, and it appeared that there was a definite need at that moment in time for this project.
And I believe
that project is no longer necessary, I do think that we should reallocate those. I think we should put them back in the fund or at least
re-unallocate them?
Undo what we did so that we can then allocate those for needs down the road.
And maybe may go back to the same thing eventually, but right now.
Katie, do you see animals as a volunteer that you think could benefit from training?
Absolutely. I think I can speak from the volunteer portion of this program, and I think that I probably speak more for the long-term volunteers rather than the ones that maybe came on board a year or two ago. We all are in agreement that we would love to have more hours for a trainer. That it really is a need that we see, that a trainer can go beyond our capacity, what we've been trained to do as far as the DEP program is concerned. You know, right now we have a dog that's been there quite a while, and we as volunteers are not really affecting any change in her behavior, which is keeping her from being adopted. And we agree that if she could have some really intense training, we might move her out of there. And I just have a question. I've only been to one other meeting, and that was my first one. It must have been 3 months ago. And is that, at that time we were talking about that we have a trainer 10 hours a month, and the board was looking at getting funds for an additional 10 hours, I think it was 500 hours a year. And I'm wondering, is that what this is, or is this something that occurred that I have no knowledge of?
It had occurred prior to 3 months ago.
Okay.
like I said, yeah, we had a volunteer from First Avenue who definitely made the case for there was a need for specialized trainer and specialized trainer supplies. So the board had agreed to a certain amount of funds for the supplies and for training hours.
Okay.
Again, we can always go back and reinstate.
So do we vote on this reassessment deal, or what do we do? I mean, or do we just let you find out what the process is?
I would say it would be cleaner for me if you would vote on it, and if you agree that you would like to unallocate them and turn it back into unallocated trust dollars, and that if you want, then it has to move back into a project that you want to use the funds for. Molly isn't here, so she was kind of like speaking to me about the conditions at First Avenue. And I'm sorry, Ms. James, I don't remember. You were volunteering at First Avenue or Green Hill?
Well, First Avenue with dogs.
Okay.
Obviously, I'll move back over there once we open the facility.
Wait, so let me get it correctly. Are you saying that you could not use any further financial assistance for trainers during a given month?
Not at all. I think the concern for committing to, from my understanding, and again, I apologize, I wasn't here at the beginning of this conversation, but from my understanding is that there were a couple of concerns in terms of accepting this money. Yes, I think it would be extremely beneficial. I have a spreadsheet, I think, that was submitted a while ago that lists out the specific training materials and supplies that were requested, and they total around $8,000 or so. I think the concern about allocating additional money brought forth by this committee to a specialized trainer was that, one, we wanted to have a consensus and agreement that what was the goal, right? So sometimes we have very passionate people that come in and they say they want to fix the goal or they want to fix the problem and they want no more dogs to be behaviorally euthanized. And yes, a trainer could support that path. No, we cannot guarantee that by throwing more money towards a trainer that in a shelter environment, that the level of dogs that we care for, that would never be an option on the table.
So no one ever said it would be.
But I would say based on maybe the inspiration to this conversation in the first place, those have been...
The county policy by code is save adoptable and treatable animals. Mm-hmm. And that's in part and parcel of the contract.
Yep.
And so the presumption is that if there's a way to save and treat an animal, but nothing unreasonable or unfair to the animal. So I don't understand where that came up with. If you don't need the support, it's okay. But,
I think
you
because
do.
Because of the confusion as to whether or not this money was going to be used properly by both the receiving end and the people that are providing the funds, I would like to move that we not provide that money and then be revoked and be put back in the trust for us to reallocate at a later time.
I would second that.
And I'd like to make a secondary comment on that, Sasha. Maybe next time you can bring the list of supplies that you think you need for this purpose,
yeah.
And then we can address that.
Okay.
You have it now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that could be a separate issue.
Well, wait a minute. If you have a listing of supplies that would be pursuant to behavioral training, why would you tell us you didn't need any financial support for training?
I was trying to clarify that with the last statement, that with the money allocated specifically toward the trainer, there are some questions about what the proposed outcome would be, and I think that Green Hill felt like, yes, it would be beneficial, but that we perhaps couldn't...
You felt like you'd get your hands tied in terms of expectation for no euthanasia?
Yes, thank you. Exactly.
What do you mean Green Hill? Who determined this?
It's been a conversation, I think, between Carrie Lieberman, the director, and myself, and our canine program manager.
The one thing that we have to keep track of, too, is this money has to specifically be for Lane County Animal Control and cannot really be intended for Green Hill. Is that right? I mean, from what I remember, the trust being a
trust
direct,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
That was the purpose of the trust.
The purpose was for First Avenue only, and it didn't include Green Hill.
Generally, First Avenue is going to get the behavior problems.
Well, I know. I'm just saying we have to be kind of careful as to where that money goes. Based
of course,
on
it's going to be moot in July insofar as, you know, the facility.
You and I can agree, but it's just not that, huh?
I would say we're still contracted, continually contracted with Lane County to provide animal services. This physical location may be changing, but the services that we provide are only being enhanced.
But the verbiage of the trust is something that has to be on
there. I'd have to look at the trust again, because I can tell you I don't remember it saying it had to be specifically in support of First Avenue Shelter.
First Avenue was listed there as part of the trust agreement.
Yeah, we heard Susan Gilmore make the presentation.
Okay.
That it has to be for Lane County
animal control.
Allocated animal programs, whether it's by decision of the board to a contractor like Green Hill or to another contractor or to
that would be the gray area is whether we can sub contract.
Well, we have
like if we had wild horse, you know, abandoned horses or something else, you know, whatever comes up.
Well, I can certainly look at the trust document again. I can certainly send it out to this board if you don't already have a copy that you can look at.
Send it up to your attorney first.
But I just don't recall that it was limited to
She was very precise and very specific. It was not for any other organization.
Absolutely.
It was for this, and we remember that.
We did, because we were thinking
and we can bring her back in if we need to.
But we had other things we were going to contribute it to, and we couldn't because it didn't fit that mold.
Well, then I guess I'd ask if First Avenue, if all services transition to Green Hill and there is no more First Avenue that's taking in animals, then what's...
There's Lane County Animal Control.
There's still Lane County Animal Control animals that would be under the umbrella of Lane County.
Okay, well, then that would be Green Hill. Part of that would be Green Hill.
Yeah, but not necessarily in perpetuity.
No.
You don't know. I mean, that's the presumption.
We could contribute $50,000 towards a spay and neuter program for Lane County.
Yeah. I mean, so there's... You just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if Sasha and Carrie and everyone left and it went down the tubes like it has in the past, then the county would have to, Green Hill, would have to rethink the whole contract.
Well, I didn't
which
mean
I hope
it was
will never
just
happen,
primarily
but it
just
has happened
Green Hill,
in the past.
But Green Hill would be a part, could be a part of Lane County Animal Services since we contract with them.
Be careful what we think of when we don't have a lawyer deciding for us.
Well, Green Hill's a contractor, just like... You know, Franz Bread down in the restaurant in the county courthouse. I mean, the excellent contractor. But let's move forward if we could.
Yeah, but in the kennel, one dog could be a Green Hill dog, and another dog could be a Lane County dog, and they could be identified as such.
Didn't you move most of the dogs from First Avenue over to Green Hill, or was it the cat? You said last time you did.
So this last summer, we leveled the kennel at Green Hill Humane Society and began building the two new dog housing facilities. And so we moved all of the dogs down to First Avenue temporarily. All of the cats were then moved up to Green Hill so that the dogs could spread out in the entire shelter. We could flex the space depending on our population. And we imagine that July 1st is our date to have everybody officially merged back up at the Green Hill location and a portion of the construction to be completed in order to safely and appropriately house the dog.
And tell me if I have this correct. There's, in the kennel, there's a Lane County Animal Control section and a Green Hill section for the dogs.
No.
Is that correct?
Kind of. There are two buildings. One is strictly for adoption. The other is our building for stray hold. So animal welfare officers, police officers, first responders will bring animals in. It'll also be the area in which we keep our crisis care animals. So those that have been brought in because their owners have been incarcerated or hospitalized. And then those that are being held for court order. So less, very much less access to just members of the public that are coming through and looking, an extended area for more rehabilitation designed care.
You know what troubles me is that when LCAS had the contract, when LCAS wasn't intact, we had a full-time behaviorist. And I know that because I was on the budget committee and we got it. And I just don't understand how there's no need for one now. I just can't understand that. but maybe...
She didn't say no need.
No, well, she said there was a minimal need for 10 hours a month, and that she didn't need any more.
I think she said something else, too. Then I think I see this, and that is that I think the transit time for dogs at that facility is less than what it has been in the past. It's not a holding facility as much as it used to be, because we have such an incredible demand for dogs right now. If you see right now, people can have a litter of Labradors at $2,000 a piece and they're gone the day they're born. They're all gone, okay? That has to trickle down to the Humane Society, and people are coming out there, and they don't blink an eye at $200, $300, $400, $500, $600 for a dog, where before, if they had to pay $75, they kind of would think about it and walk away.
Part of the reason for that is there's fewer breeders of purebreds.
But whatever, I know all those things are true. However, the result is that the transit time for dogs is not as long.
True.
And so you have less need for dogs for behavioral issues because they're staying there such a long time and they have an abnormal living situation. And I think that would be what I'd expect, is that we'd have less demand when the dogs aren't spending as much time there. Well, transit time's pretty fast.
I'd say we've even seen a decrease in transit time or length of stay by joining our two dog facilities into one. Just from a retail perspective, people going they used to visit First Avenue, and then they'd go to Green Hill, and then maybe back down at First Avenue. And when they're presented with, these are all of the animals currently available for adoption in the shelter.
Yeah. Make your decision.
Yeah,
I think that's true.
So
transit time, irrespective of this, there are animals that are surrendered. There are animals that are given up. There are animals that people give up on because of their behavior.
Yes.
There are animals that end up in that system because of their behavior.
And the question is, are they treatable or not?
But we created less of them. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
They're
the ones that come in that way, not the ones
forever.
That end up that way.
When you have them for 60 days, it kind of screws them up a little bit for a while. So.
Well, you prepared a list of supplies that were authorized by the board.
Yes.
And what's the amount for that?
$8,274.35. This includes enrichment and training, toys, targeting sticks for dogs, feeding toys, treat pouches for our volunteers, a pet tutor training system, aprons for volunteers, and portalized cat cages.
Why don't we just authorize that?
Can I call for a question?
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Question, we go to a vote. Robert's rules. We have a discussion. I call for a question, we vote on it.
Okay.
I'm ready.
And if anyone votes in favor of your motion, that person can immediately move for reconsideration. So that being said, all those in favor of eliminating any support for Green Hill on this, say aye.
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 Aye. All right. I say no.
I think what you do now is you re-request it, okay?
Right.
You request it on your grounds, not on ones that we had 6 months ago.
Just the supplies.
And you put a supply order in, and if it's legal for us to do through the trust directions, then we'll vote on that, okay? But I think we could get ourselves in a bind on this trust thing.
What do you mean? The board already decided that it was all right.
According to the original request, but this is a different request.
The supplies are not. That's the
yes,
original.
Yes, the supplies are a different request.
They're just a subset of the.
They're a subset of Green Hill requests as opposed to the animal.
Yeah, that's why it's in here for $23,000 instead of $8,000. It doesn't matter. We've already called for the question. We've answered it, and we
just took back our authorization for the $23,000. Now we can reauthorize to the board. Recommend to the board for the 8.
And ask Sasha to resubmit.
Wait a minute.
Or to submit a request that would be unambivalent about how reporting or outcome or expectations.
Unambiguous?
Yes.
Yeah. We have another item that we have talked about that we were going to. address, and that is the helping that organization,
CDC,
in coordination with Green Hill to get a X-ray machine. And we talked about a match, which you seem kind of favorable to, but I wonder if that's a feasible thing. Could you please, I don't know this group here. I do, I'm aware of it. They started quite a while ago, and then they kind of in suspension. Is this really important to them?
You know, they recently lost their veterinarian. So I can't speak.
The problem is getting a veterinarian at all. They have a hard time finding volunteers and a hard time finding a veterinarian.
Well, the trust was supposed to be for animal control. This is not animal control.
No, not at all.
So the trust should not be going
to this. We were stretching it when we looked at it, that animals could end up in animal control if they were not medically treated. And people who were low income gave up and said, I give. But I think that was too much of a stretch. And John and I went and visited. So if anybody wants
to give
our take.
I have a question about this, and that is, why do we need one specific piece of equipment, which is most veterinarians have waited for years and years to get a hold of? Why do we start with that when there's all kinds of, I would rather see that $32,000 if we did have it available to contribute right directly to the people that need animal care. That X-ray doesn't do anything for those animals. You could have had an old $5,000 X-ray that can diagnose a broken leg and diagnose almost everything you need. Having a digital X-ray is like a person on a corner driving a brand new Cadillac. What would be the purpose of that?
Cancer.
That would be a totally wasteful way to spend money.
I agree.
Tumors, foreign objects.
We can diagnose 98% of tumors without a digital X-ray. I can guarantee you. We can diagnose 98% of the fractures, maybe 99, without a digital X-ray. And so that is a ridiculously expensive project for someone that is trying to just help, okay? I mean, getting that particular piece of equipment is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Dr. Pemple, John and I went there, and it was our take upon exiting that there was not the volume there, there was not the need there, it was not...
Okay.
A wise thing for us to do.
That
was based on our visit.
If you have an X-ray machine, you can diagnose almost everything on this one.
It's not digital.
Right. What's an auto
share? To share one, I think, is not feasible. You'd have to share one with Green Hill. Wouldn't you have to move it back and forth?
At the most, you'd move the dog back.
No, they would keep it at Green Hill. This would have been kept at Green Hill, right?
Yeah, I would just like to say that this was not this request was not inspired by Green Hill in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Yeah,
that there was a communication that perhaps if Green Hill were planning on getting an X-ray machine at some point when our medical clinic becomes closer to completion, and that we like to play nice with our other local community members, and so there would be the opportunity for another organization such as CDC to come out and utilize our machine, perhaps. That's the only involvement that Green Hill has in this request.
The community center is right next to our clinic. They can come over and get an X-ray for
$50, $100,
something like that, anytime they want to, okay? I mean, it's not, and we have a digital X-ray, so it's not like it's not available and they couldn't spend a few dollars to get it done for a fraction of this price. And it doesn't make any sense at all. And I don't mean to be mean about this, but this is where a person they want something, but it doesn't add up. It doesn't make any financial sense.
I don't think that this would be an appropriate way to use the trust fund money.
Let's vote on it.
You
said they have an X-ray machine?
The other, no, they just have like a little one that they can do mouths with or something.
Oh, an oral?
Yeah.
A dental machine?
Yeah. There was another request on that list, which I think might make sense, but I still don't think we're within the trust fund to allocate money to another organization when it was supposed to be for Lane County Animal.
I make a motion that we do not allocate any money out of this trust for the CVC.
I second it.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion's passed.
When did they lose their bet?
It was after we were there, which has been a month ago.
About a month ago.
I heard from one of the employees there that that was going to happen, but it was after we'd been there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
The problem, and I'll kind of give you an overview of this a little bit. The coast right now, along the Oregon coast, has 10 openings for veterinarians, and they're really seeking them and are willing to pay a pretty good wage and cannot fill them. They can't fill the spots. In Eugene, I think there's 6 or 7, and in every town up the valley, there's 6 or 7. So there's an incredible need for veterinary services right now that are unattainable by private or public groups. And so we have to be careful thinking that we can just fill something in, you know what I mean, when those people simply aren't available at this point.
So we did spend some $16,000 for wood panels and the repair of the air control doors, etc. Are they going to be moved over when you leave First Avenue, or not the panels, but these doors or anything, or is that just?
I'll have to check.
Has there been any discussion of any other organizations using the First Avenue?
Well, I'm recommending that from a Lake County viewpoint that we get out from underneath that building completely. Now, if Eugene wants to take it over for their spay neuter clinic, they can pay us. If Springfield wants to be part, they can pay us. If they want to sell the whole thing, but we're getting out from underneath that building.
Why is that?
Because we don't need it. It's worth money, and we're just sitting on it. If it's going to be spay neuter clinic for Eugene, I'm not in favor of subsidizing Eugene.
Why would we subsidize? They own their
co-owners. Well, we're co-owners with it, and I want our share liquidated, one way or another. Because there's no benefit for us. We aren't going to do anything with the building. So we already have our lawyers looking into how this tangled three-way ownership thing, because that's the way it is on the tax records we checked. So we want to get out from our piece out from underneath, and I'm not donating it.
Does the board agree with you?
We haven't presented it to the board yet. But that's the direction I'm headed.
And where would that money go?
Well, it'd go back to the general fund, I assume.
Well, the only public policy consequence would be the elimination, perhaps, of the City of Eugene spay and neuter facility.
But that's, don't work for the city.
Yeah, but the county entered into a compact with the city, both of them.
The city is the one who dissolved that compact.
No, they dissolved the contract, but they didn't dissolve the reason for constructing the shelter and jointly financing the shelter. And shortly thereafter, in 1978, they divided the functions, particularly when Springfield opted out. And so the county agreed that Eugene would operate the spay and neuter clinic, and the city agreed that Lane County would do the other. So I just don't think it's that easy to deal with.
Well, we'll certainly do our packet and let the board decide, but that's going to be my recommendation. That we have from
you could reassess the need.
Yeah, I mean, we don't run the shelter anymore.
Right.
So we have a contractor to do that. I'm not saying they'd have to pay market value, because it's $900,000. But
what, that 5 acres?
Yeah.
It's a lot of wetland.
Yeah, I know. I've cleaned up a lot of homeless camps behind there.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But why shouldn't they pay?
Huh?
Why shouldn't they pay the county market?
Well, I don't know. I'm saying we want to get out of it and get some money out of it. Because I think it's going to be an albatross around our neck. And we have lots of surplus properties, and I'm not just picking on the First Avenue shelter, but if we don't have a use that's within the mission and scope of what Lane County Animal Services does now, then I think we should get it out.
Well, part of the mission of Lane County Animal Service is low-cost spay and neuter and lowering the population.
Yeah, but we have a program that can handle that. So
where is that program?
the vouchers that we provide.
But it's basically inoperative.
Well, I wouldn't say it's inoperative. It's the program we have, and people are welcome to use it.
So. Well, okay. So, moving on here. Green Hill activity. No, do you want to deal with our committee goals? I thought we dealt with that last time, Betty.
Well, part of the discussion was every year advisory committees need to adopt their goals for the year. So these were the 2018 goals, and
didn't we review them all? Didn't we spend time?
You have reviewed them all, but I don't recall getting clear direction on are these exactly the same goals that you would like to have for 2019. And then we've also had discussion about prioritizing them and attaching tangible tasks and outcomes that measure success. So that's kind of where we've struggled a bit with establishing that.
I think it's a pretty comprehensive list here, and I think that these things are what we are dealing with, I mean, today. Continued discussion on Harriet Ruby Smith, review issues surrounding importation, just for two, and Dave's going to do that. It seems to me...
It was just part of our discussion that it would be nice to have license compliance increased by 10% or something that's more less touchy-feely and more...
But it's like taking your goals and you attach something tangible to them that is a measurable, like a goal, like increasing it by 10%, maybe not even 10%, maybe 5%, maybe 3%. But then it's like, how do you accomplish that? So that's where I was trying to kind of see if the board was interested in actually identifying tangible outcomes and success, so you can measure that success.
Continue focus upon license compliance. Does anyone have any ideas to add to this, or is this at least now sufficient?
The way it is.
All right. And if you'd like to make a motion to add increased licenses by 5%?
It's already in here about increasing license compliance.
Right. Just... The conversation that we had is that we are not measurable that we're making progress on any of these, other than talk about, encourage, think, hope, plan.
The reason, Jim, that happens is that so often when we have a plan, we do have a plan, we want to do this, but when it comes to what do we do about non-compliance, what do we do when we fail in getting that percentage? Do we actually have power to send people out and ticket them for not getting on the dock? And every time we've ever done that, they go, oh, no, we don't want to do anything that would offend the public. We don't want to do anything that might upset them. Isn't that true, Scott, from what we've heard? Is that we don't want to enforce the rules. We want to encourage people to do the right thing. But if we just want to encourage people, and then we want to measure our compliance, we're probably not going to do very good, because there has to be some enforcement along the way someplace. And we've talked about this ad nauseum over the last several years.
The Calgary model.
That if you don't do a little bit of enforcement someplace along the line.
Absolutely.
Well, we do it. I send out 1,000 citation letters a month.
I know. But this is
that is enforcement.
Does it end up with a fine?
I dismiss a couple of weeks for animals
and then you're doing what you can do, and what else? I mean,
the big thing that we did is we hired another half-time animal control officer.
And so you have time to
I don't send animal control. I don't send animal control officers out to do this. This is the office staff.
This is all done by phone and mail.
And it's done the computer program that we just updated.
Honest people will be honest, kind of a deal.
Yeah. Well, they get if they fail to respond, we cite them.
Okay.
And they have to come back to tell us.
And how many fines have actually been paid for that? Have there been many fines?
Of course.
People's credit is involved. It can affect their credit.
Yeah.
So so if that happens, you should be able to have a measurable improvement in your licensing, I would think.
Well, we do track that. But for this advisory board, you need to have your purpose and...
Well, part of the function of this board was to install that whole licensing program.
Yeah.
Particularly dependent upon veterinarian forwarding of the rabies certificates. And towards that goal, the staff would go and pay a visit to the office managers of a given
vet
place.
We did that, and we brought them Christmas cookies.
What? What?
We brought them Christmas cookies this year. We went and visited all the vet's office with Christmas cookies and a reminder of how the program works for spay, neuter, and rabies, and all the things that we ask of them. And at least the new animal control officer brought cookies to all of them.
Very honestly, the problem you have is that you have veterinary hospitals that are in incorporated areas that do their own licensing, and you have no power over that. You only have power over the people that are in the county, and there are very few clinics that are in the county proper
right.
that you have any say-so over.
No, wait. No.
The city of Eugene, in their animal code, requires their clinics to forward the rabies stuff to Lane County also.
That's correct. However,
as far as licensing, no, we don't.
Florence, does it do it? Did you get the people in Florence to do it?
I thought we had everybody
in
compliance now. The only issue we have now is some people not giving the free license out from the spay-neuter mm-hmm. clinic. But the rabies part we've got solved. Mm-hmm.
We pretty much have good cooperation with the rabies
reporting.
Because
I know that Cottage Grove and Vanita voted against it.
So did Oak Ridge.
If
that was more than a decade ago.
No, they did. I mean, that was...
Then they're required by state law to report the rabies to the state.
Okay.
We're responsible for, of course, unincorporated Lane County, and any city that adopted our animal code, like Eugene, or didn't adopt it exactly.
Which
but that
was
part
only
they
two
did.
Cities, that was Eugene and Junction City. Nobody else adopted it.
Yeah, Eugene and Junction City, the only two that did. Okay. So... I think the rest of them are not
required. Springfield also.
No, they voted against it.
They don't have the legal authority to really vote against it. If you look at Oregon law, we had...
They did vote against it.
A bogus...
Every other community in the
county. Yeah, but the fact was it was all predicated on what has been looked upon as a bogus, insubstantial, on-a-napkin opinion by a former county attorney that said... that a requirement for people to report rabies vaccinations is of the nature of a police power and therefore subject only to individual jurisdictions. And that,
be that as it may,
that's not
anything that we can change.
Yeah, but the requirement's a state requirement. So if a city opts out of the county, they still have to report it to the state. They're just not going through us. It's not a county requirement other than we're taken straight out of the ORS.
It's a requirement that dogs get rabies shots.
That's correct.
For health issues.
Yes.
The rabies reporting is totally separate.
You know,
also required by the ORS.
If we go through the different requirements that we have for USDA and the state of Oregon, they don't even agree, okay? And when I talk to the state, I say, where do these things get recorded? Where do they get reported? Where do they get reported back? They said, we'd have no files like that. We don't keep track of any of that stuff, okay? Because every large animal is supposed to have an ID tag, and every animal is supposed to have an ID tag before it goes from this state to this state. Thousands of animals go from Oregon to Colorado to California, you name it, and not a single one of those is recorded to where they could be followed up, okay?
Well,
because the USDA and the state don't have a coordination.
No, we've run into that issue when a dangerous behavior dog wanted to move out of state, and the judge in Colorado said no, we're not going to take it. And we're like, fine. We wanted this Colorado judge to say we'll accept this dog, and they wouldn't do it for that type of.
I know,
issue.
But they
so
don't.
Like
they don't get a health certificate and just go. I mean,
no,
I'm sorry,
but they do just usually just go.
Yeah. No, that's right. So all I'm saying is what is said by, and I think Scott's right as far as technically all these things could be true, but practically they aren't done. Does that make sense?
Well, I know is for the vets that participate in our program that are under our animal code, we work with them to get these reports in, and almost all of them will comply with. No issues.
That includes Eugene veterinarians, doesn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
that essentially is only Eugene.
Eugene is the county seat.
Junction City is doing it.
Eugene's the county seat.
Yeah, I don't think. I'm not familiar with Junction City.
It's been quite a while since they've reported.
Yeah.
Well,
But they could. I mean, it's
they could.
Yeah, I'd have to check on that. But it's my understanding that the vets that we require the rabies report from, that we've been getting all of them.
Yeah.
The only issue that lately has been the free license.
Yeah. With
previously, before Greenhill took over, Scott and I remember what was going on. You would get very few reports from one vet and a lot from the other. And sometimes the one that reported a lot, the next month they report none. And those are the issues we've worked on steadily.
So this committee would each month look at your tables mm-hmm. for how many. And for example, if Westmoreland, for example, which is a big practice, or it was, it used to be. I went in there once and had like 1,000 files. If they gave like one or two things, well, that's bull. But the question is, how do you amicably, without being pushy or rude, inspire them or
take them cookies? I think explain them.
Or double the amount of money that you give for selling a license or for forwarding a rabies certificate.
Most of the vets that are reporting does the county no good because they're people that their clients are in the city.
They what?
Some of the clients that are outside of the city realize what's going on, and so they don't use vets within the city.
The actual authority is the county health board, which is the county commissioners and some others. And that's where, if there's a dog bite, it goes to Health and Human Services, who checks on it.
That's right.
So there is a requirement. And if I'm not saying that there's not some that fall through the cracks, but it's not anything that we know about and don't try to take care of.
Anyway, we patterned this after New Jersey and New Hampshire in 2003. New Hampshire started requiring rabies certificates. We only have 5 more hours. We'll move it on. But New Hampshire started requiring that vets report rabies vaccinations. And in so doing, the number of euthanasias plummeted. And the number of impounds plummeted. And the revenue increased markedly. So that's how we fashioned these two codes, the city of Eugene and Lane County. And it just seemed reasonable without being too intrusive. And Dave talks about a couple of people being uncomfortable with their dogs being identified. Some people are over the limit.
Well, there's
some people have privacy.
There's a very specific, very few number of people, I don't remember all off the top of my head, who's allowed to have access to that information. And maybe you remember Dr. Pimples, but it's the county health officer, and there's
the problem,
not many.
The problem we have is trying to sell that to the public.
Yeah.
Okay? You can tell people that you're never going to take your guns, and I'm going to try to tell you that's a hard sell.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's what's hard for us as veterinarians to sell to the public, that we promise you that it'll never be reported,
yeah.
Okay? Because there's a basic, and especially in rural Oregon, there's a basic distrust for government.
I can tell you the number of times that one of my animal control officers goes and has been given and says, this person's rabies expired, and we go do something about it. Zero times. Zero times are we going to send someone out to do anything about that.
Right. I know that because they would be coming to me overdue if that were true.
Yeah.
When I found that rabid dog in 1974, we had thousands of dogs that had come in that had never had a vaccine before. I don't care if they were free, and we did them free or for a dollar. And all of a sudden, for a dollar a piece, we had, I forget how many thousands of people come in for vaccines. And they were dogs that looked pretty ratty. I mean, all these dogs really were dogs that never had utilized any sort of veterinary service.
Well, I think Chair Bartlett's point about basing this on other states where it's very successful is well taken because, look, push comes to shove. We're importing dogs from other places because we don't have enough for people around here.
Oh, yeah.
So we're doing a good job somehow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that things can't get better and things don't fall through the crack.
But in fact, this is the argument about the spay and neuter clinic.
Yeah.
Is with Greenhill and different places doing really inexpensive spays and neuters and having a shortage of dogs where we have to import dogs, your argument about the spay and neuter clinic may be being obsolete, that we can rethink that Yeah, I think it's legitimate, okay? I mean, it's not that they haven't done a good job, but they serve their purpose and we go on.
They do 3,500 spays a year.
So?
That's a lot. That contributes.
I think if you look at Green Hill numbers and if you look at our numbers, that would be just sort of a token.
Do you think Green Hill's, the city contributes at all to the spay-neuter situation?
I do, particularly because Green Hill does not currently provide, nor do we have any interest in providing in the near future, high-volume, low-cost spay-neuter for community members. So I feel like that clinic serves a purpose in terms of already owned animals and being able to provide a service and vaccinations and flea treatment and whatnot. But the Green Hill is never going.
That's not true. That's simply not true, okay? You have been providing spays and neuters for the public for a reasonably long time.
But she said high volume.
What? But she said something else. She said we're not interested in providing spays and neuters for community-owned animals.
High volume.
I apologize. Yeah, for...
But you do that, okay? Because I know of lots of my patients that have gone there and been spayed with your doctors, okay?
Only if they come in as a stray dog?
No.
And they're not altered?
No, not true at all.
Or they're an adoptable shelter dog?
That is a falsehood, okay? I'm serious.
Doctor.
I did address your doctor with it. Of owned animals.
How long ago?
And
what year was this?
Huh?
What?
That was just last year.
So you're saying someone from the public, like me, with my dog, can take it to Green Hill and say, I never knew of that service.
I never knew of that service, and I'm the director of
all they have to do is say, this is a neighborhood cat. When that neighborhood cat is done...
Well, if they lie...
Right. Okay, if they lie, but this is an obvious... Okay, I see a cat, has a collar on it, has a little bell on it, has its name on it, and it's a fat cat... That has been well taken care of, okay? It doesn't take a genius to figure out that is not a stray cat.
Because I have to deal with the calls from the emergency vet multiple times a week.
Yeah.
And sometimes the vet is a little suspicious because this dog or this cat is well tended for. And I think they're just trying to get free medical care.
Absolutely. And I don't really blame people for doing it.
But then we'll confront them with that and say, I'll pay for it, the county's going to pay for it, but then we're transported to Green Hill.
My point is that it's convenient to just take their word for it, right?
Well, yeah, okay.
And that can be true, okay? Now, I'm not saying anything negative about Green Hill. I'm simply saying they've been doing that for a long time, and that's fine. But it is to deny it is silly. And I addressed her, and she said, well, yeah, if they say that they don't think it's owned by anybody, we do them, you know what I mean?
I apologize. The TNR program is different than what I was speaking to. So we do have a free program for feral, free-roaming cats
That's a different thing altogether.
To come in and be spayed and neutered and then return to field.
Mm-hmm.
I was specifically speaking about owned animals.
Right.
No, you cannot bring your owned animal to us, and we will not perform spay and neuter.
But they are owned. And it doesn't take very much investigation to know that they're owned, okay? I know because I know the patients. Okay?
You have to just agree.
I have a record of them with their name on it, and they go there to get a spay.
Please tell them to put a microchip in their cat. Or have them wear a collar.
We do. When people are looking for bargains and want the humane side to do them, they're not going to do a microchip right away. Right. Okay.
Cost money.
Okay. I'll have to agree to disagree. And, my disappointment, I just theoretically, is it's nice to be able to give some of these funds for animals. And, we can draw this distinction and that distinction and this sphere of, jurisdiction or not. But...
weren't we discussing the goals?
Yeah, no. We're moving on to the next agenda here. But if you can think of... legitimate expenditures that would enhance animals under Lane County's general jurisdiction from your operations at our next meeting, I appreciate it. And maybe these supplies would be resurrected, right? Okay, so number five is Green Hill activity.
Chair, could I impose on the board to provide me clarification about the 2018 goals? Okay, do you want to vote? And so I have a motion, a second, and a vote.
I'll make a motion we accept these goals as 2019.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is carried. So, all right. Answer, question answered. So,
thank you.
Green Hill, Sasha.
Yes, so we've submitted reports that both include the outcomes from the public shelter and adoption programs, and then our public shelter report designates our beginning shelter count as of March 1st, all of the intakes separated by intakes from officers or intakes from members of the public in Lane County, total of the outcomes, and not much else. I would say construction is continuing to progress quite nicely, and as I mentioned before, we anticipate the merging of our two locations onto the one Green Hill campus, hopefully by July 1st of this year. I'm currently in communication to make sure that any materials that are sent out through the county or our other jurisdictions have that updated information in a timely manner so that people will understand the location change. We're also gladly taking suggestions and direction in terms of communicating that move to the public. We've had great media support. We're looking at some signage both at the First Avenue location as well. I think that's going to rely heavily on if Eugene Spanier can stay from that location or not. We're making all necessary preparations to vacate that location, move all of our operations and all of the animals up by July 1st.
What are, how many parts are there to your total construction project? Is it two or three?
It's ongoing. The first phase we anticipate will be completed by July 1st, and that primarily is our two new dog housing facilities, the adoption facility and then the stray hold and crisis care facility. In addition, we're expanding some of our cattery spaces, our cat care spaces, and looking at adding some catios on the outside of some of the individual cat rooms that are located off of the main Green Hill cattery.
The ones that are there right now, those catteries?
Yep, correct.
Those are nice.
We're also looking at expanding our small animal space. We primarily care for dogs and cats, but last year we cared for 12 other species aside from dogs and cats, and so looking at growing that space so that we can have more area to care for them and some delineation between like predator prey. If we get a ferret, can't house them in the same space as rabbits. And the second phase of the project will encompass a core building in the center of Green Hill's front lobby and cattery and the new kennels. And that will include expanded medical clinic and some centralized laundry and storage.
Kennels, dog kennels?
Dog kennels are the first phase. That will be complete by...
Right, you just said you're going to put some kennels in the second phase, though. You said kennels.
Clinic?
You said kennels.
I didn't mean to, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That'll be like your central building, like right now when you walk in, there's the counter, and there are your offices, and there's a cattery, and... Are you going to tear that down or just expand it?
No, we're just adding, doing a little remodel to it to make it easier. The really exciting thing, too, is that we do plan on starting full operation 7 days a week to the public.
Wow.
As of July 1st or once that merge happens. We're currently 7 days a week between the two locations, but each shelter has 2 days closed to the public, which really elongates the animal's length of stay. So by merging the locations and being accessible to members of this community 7 days a week, we anticipate that that's going to be a great service, an improvement to the public.
What kind of disruption in terms of, you said accessible to members of the community, I mean, I raise this point, obviously that it's further out and for people who don't have cars or whatever, what are you thinking about that issue?
Yeah, so we have, we've been in communication with LTD. We're hoping to reinstitute a bus stop in front of the Green Hill location. We also are starting to look into Uber and Lyft and some of the private transportation companies, there are some cabs that will come out and allow people to bring their animals with them and not transport them back, but we don't have anything secure at this point.
Currently, LTD doesn't allow dogs and cats on their buses.
Right.
So are you going to change that, maybe?
That's a tough hill to climb.
I know. Because we'd like to see you change that, you know. We have a lot of people that would like to go to Bonita, and we would use that, but we can't.
Maybe we should join forces.
We have a lot coming from Florence, a tremendous Florence, you know, and boy, we could get them to just let dogs and cats, you know, put them in a box, put them whatever they want.
You have customers coming from Florence?
Thousands. Remember I told you there's no veterinarians? They cannot get the physical bodies to practice at the coast.
There's none in Florence now?
There's two, but people tell me they have to wait for weeks to get an appointment.
Right off 101 there, I know that one. Well, let us know how we can help you and how we could possibly utilize this this trust. I mean, obviously when things change, maybe there'll be some further discussion, you know.
Can the county commissioners ask LTD to look into this?
I'd love to see them change.
Sure.
We could recommend to the county commissioners that they do that.
That's true. That's a good idea.
At least have the same as airline requirements, you know.
Yeah.
If you have an enclosed carrier, they should be able to carry them.
Do you get homeless people and people
if the airline can do it, the bus can.
Without cars coming into First Avenue?
Well, I happen to know that they have quite a large homeless camp just to the south of them that I've been dealing with. And that lady there had 7 cats the last time I was out there.
Oh, gosh.
I think we got her cleared out, though. But, yeah, there's not only a lot, because homeless is also one of my issues. And I clear camps constantly that have pets. Not necessarily that close to greenhouse. That's why I wasn't really worried about those cats. But it's a big issue. And if sometimes I'll call our animal control officer out there or the city of Eugene's and work collaboratively. When we had the big Camp 99 out there, Betty and Bernie came out on a Sunday in the animal control trucks and took all the unlicensed, unvaccinated homeless pets to the clinic at the Mission?
Pro bono,
yeah, and got them vaccinated and licensed before they moved to the new St. Vincent de Paul camp, where
you returned them to their companions?
Yeah.
Well, they went with us.
They went with them.
We transported
the owners
them with
went
us.
With.
Well, that's cool.
We just transported them because we needed to get the animals.
Good job.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that most people don't understand is that when you try to take animals from a homeless camp, those animals are really like, they're all sick. They've all been together. They have every disease exposure you have. And so they're not all healthy animals. They're kind of like the American Native Indian when smallpox came over here. It just seems like they got one thing after the other that's wrong. And so it's hard for you guys to handle that kind of a patient where you don't know whether to put all the sick animals together in one spot or treat them and keep them in the camps, or how do you deal with it? It's actually a very frustrating thing because we deal with it. I had 3 come in today. You know, they were homeless cats. And so, I had to put those 3 together because I only have so many spots where you have isolation where you can kind of keep them, get them done, get them home again. But, you know, they never have anything done. You know,
we're making progress in that area because one of the things was animals was never anything that, for the homeless as well as in disasters, like we've done with the snowstorm, like I did today with the flooding, and moved some horses today.
Up by 58?
Yeah. And so it's things that we've never looked about in the past. We would like deal with the homeless camp, deal with the disaster, not worry about the animals. Well, a lot of people won't go to a shelter in a disaster if they can't take their pets. So we have to think about it. And then homeless, they're not going to cooperate with us if we're not going to take care of their pets. So we've adjusted.
And the problem is that I wouldn't mind taking care of the animals. I wouldn't have to take care of the people. I don't want to do both.
It's a challenge.
I'll make a motion. That we recommend to the commissioners to look into talking with LTD about allowing pets in pet carriers on the buses.
Yeah, That would be great.
Wait, and to extend a route to Green Hill.
To Green Hill, that's fine too.
Or Green Hill Road.
I'd like to take that one step further and just say, not just suggest we talk about it, but we recommend that they do that.
Yeah. That they extend service to Green Hill Road or Green
Well,
Hill.
The commissioners can extend, but Elk TD can, and the commissioners would put pressure there.
Yeah.
I would like to have those as two separate entities because we benefit from them getting to ride on a bus as well as, I mean, if you lose them both, then that's the way it is.
Sure.
It'd be nice to have them separate items.
Okay, you want to make just a clean?
Sure.
So your motion is?
To recommend to the commissioners that they, I don't know, how do you
request
want
to develop a policy that would permit pets on LTD buses.
Well, okay. No, they request that LTD.
Yeah.
So,
well, we would let LTD decide how they're going to make it happen.
Right.
Whatever they need.
But they've refused.
Recommend it.
LTD
yeah,
has already been.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they've already been contacted. They haven't gone for it, right, Sasha?
Correct.
So, I'm not saying it's going to be successful.
No,
Portland is successful, though.
Yeah, try that.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked for it this year for something you're going to want in 2 years.
Right.
Does that make sense? You asked for it this year, you asked for it next year.
And
you
I think
for
the
third year you get it.
Possibly getting service to Green Hill, and there used to be service out there, wasn't there?
But you...
We make it an equity issue, and then that's the way to approach it.
So you're going to make a motion that the Board of Commissioners request LTD to extend service
to pets with pet in pet carriers.
Maybe you could even make it exclusive where they could just go to the Green Hill or to a vet or something.
Well, that would be a
leave Green Hill out of the first one.
Let's that would be a separate
that they allow
motion.
Pets to travel on LTD buses.
Okay.
You could be dealing with liability paranoia, but go ahead. No. Any other discussion on that one?
Well, do we have a second?
Maybe they'll come back that they have to be in carriers.
Yeah, but if they get out, it bites somebody else.
Is the wording okay, Betty?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think the most important thing is, well, okay, good. All right, any discussion?
More of it.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay,
now
so
the
now
separate.
Second motion. Second motion
separate
is to request the Board of Commissioners
to encourage.
Request
to
LTD.
Encourage.
Service to Green Hill.
To extend service to Green Hill.
Is that yours?
Yeah, I'll recommend that,
and I'll second it.
You know, maybe a couple times a day or something.
Yeah, it could be just a couple times.
That would be
times.
Up to them.
You know. Okay. Any discussion? Was there a second on that one?
And that would be 7 days a week. 7 days a week, okay, because they're open on weekends.
Does LTD run on Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
They have limited routes.
But their big haul would be Saturday, Sunday. I mean, they could be just healthy.
Okay, extend service to Green Hill 7 days a week. So that's
yes.
Very.
Yes. Yep.
I'll second it.
Now, is it Green Hill Road or Green Hill Humane Society? Or
Green Hill Humane Society, of course.
Yes.
Well, I would spank you because there's also, what's the wetlands thing right across?
Right. Yeah.
And they could incorporate that. Now, is there a route that goes? I mean, someone would have to investigate that. There may already be a route that kind of goes in that.
It's close. There's one that goes straight down West 11th.
Right.
It stops at the corner of Green Hill and West 11th.
That's a long ways in.
But it's about a quarter of a mile up a very busy road with no area to be seen.
Yeah.
And then the next one, I think, the next closest is up on Royal and Danville.
But there's maybe a way that they can incorporate that too, because if they're going to go to Royal, they're going to go right by your driveway, okay? And there's no reason why they couldn't go up there and make a little circle right through Greenhill.
At least twice a day or something. Okay.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion's agreed to. All right. Anything else from Greenhill? Okay. Lane County Animal Services activity?
Well, I'll just tell you things we just did today.
Yeah,
the flooding.
You told us a lot.
I drove the Coast Fork and down the west east side, down Cloverdale Road and Sears Road to Cottage Grove, and came up 99 and checked things out there. There was no issues. Bernie went to Triangle Lake and that area, and then that was him just calling me. Said we sent because the Corps is concerned about Fern Ridge now. How much is, and we thought there would be some livestock issues. That's what we were looking for. And he just went from Fern Ridge Dam down to the county line to check for anything. So we did three different scouting missions. They look for livestock and didn't find any in distress. We did, someone called us that needed to move four horses. And we got
I was going to say, look for small paddocks for horses. That's, because most cow people are
horses.
They're more vested than that, and they
cows and sheep don't have any problem.
No, because
they are the horses. They come more.
Farmers are going to take care of their animals. Yeah. But
what was the deal in the paper about 44 sheep were killed by allegedly dogs?
Last week
dogs.
Was a bad week. We had 44 sheep killed by we think three dogs. It's still under investigation on Clear Lake Road. We had 8 lambs killed and 1 sheep and 1 mule wounded out near Armitage Park, and then in Crestville we had 30 chickens killed, all by Roman dogs.
You sure it's dogs, not cougar or coyotes?
Absolutely, absolutely.
In this case, that looked like dogs.
Yeah. So
that's bad.
The Armitage Park one, we had witnesses, so we took care of it. It might be actually Green Hill now. until they go to court, we have a good idea about the other ones, but we haven't been able to prove anything.
Can't you have them tracked?
Well, I understand the one that the people that lost 44 sheep, they're kind of new to farming, and they were out. They have a piece of land not where they live, and they didn't have any guard dogs or llamas or anything out there. But they've gotten in contact with some people who know what they're doing, and they've actually, what I understand, took some sheep and lambs out there, put them out in the pasture, set up a blind. Yeah, because dogs get killed fairly frequently in Lane County from people.
Dogs what?
Get killed.
Shot.
When they're chasing livestock, legally.
Totally legal.
Right? Totally legal. Yeah. So that's fairly common occurrence. So that's what I think they're looking for in these people. Because the people we think who did it, they admitted they let their dogs roam at night.
They what?
Let their dogs roam at night.
Why?
Yeah, fast.
Is there a code to punish them?
Oh, of course. If we could prove it, we could. But we don't have any witnesses, and so we're still investigating.
Well, you do some good work here. You know, what about the low-lying areas like the Siuslaw, you know, between Mapleton and Florence and across on that sweet whatever road that is? Mm-hmm. There's livestock there, and that I know that was almost flooding yesterday.
Yeah.
Very few. Very few livestock left. That's all
they used to be
by, that's all been
farm.
Bought by Nature's Conservancy.
Yeah.
And from Florence all the way up to
Davidson?
Duncan Island is there's no cattle on that.
Okay.
And there's
up.
Only
no
a few, huh?
They lock it up, no trespassing.
Yeah, and there's only a few that have high points on that whole south side of the Siuslaw that have cattle anymore. They pretty well eliminated them.
They're doing that to ranches in southeastern Oregon too. Trying to buy up ranches and lock it up.
They've pretty much Nature's Conservancy owns all the riverbanks everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so anything else? Anything for next month's agenda? We'll come back to the Harriet Trust and any needs that you might have.
Are we an open discussion?
Yeah.
And we'll bring up importation.
Okay, go for it.
We're still seeing a lot, we're seeing more and more, and the reason we're concerned, well, there's been a bill proposed in the House in Salem to disallow dogs and cats being sold in pet stores, which if it passes is going to increase the importation because it's providing an open market for it. We've seen, and this is why I'm glad to see Dr. Penfold here, we've seen a new strain of rabies in the northeast of the United States through it. Importation. We've seen a new strain of distemper, and I didn't bring the documentation with me, but Dr. Penfold, can you elaborate on the new strain of distemper?
It's kind of like the they're not really new, but
okay.
They're new for the area. Okay. It's like they've got a new Gardasil vaccine for people now. You know, it's a 10-way instead of a 4-way, and they've got. I know I had shingles vaccine about 4 or 5 years ago. Now they got a new shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's that in the Northeast they always had a raccoon rabies, and in the South they had a coyote rabies along the Mexican border and into Mexico they had a.
As different strains.
Basically, a strain that only really, it really primarily affects those animals, and then out here we've always had a skunk and bat rabies. And if you change the animal populations, then you get the strain from wherever that import came from be imported to your area. Does that make sense? So
yes.
That's how we got heartworm for Katrina.
Yeah, no, that's how most of these diseases are transferred, is that we have like area-specific viruses and they have certain tendencies, you know what I mean? And
so is this new strain of distemper that I read about going to endanger dogs in this area?
Does the vaccine that we've given right now cross-protect them? From what we know, it does, okay? Does not the one that doesn't protect very good is that kennel cough one, the one that is the new strain of kennel cough. That's a nasty bugger.
How about the
but the vaccine for kennel cough is not a good vaccine either. So
how about the canine flu that came in from Korea?
That's the one that's all part of that same
bug. That's a problem.
Very hard to control.
And this new bill is going to increase the likelihood that.
Prohibit PetSmart from having the Saturday adoptions?
It would be rescue only.
Because we just adopted a beautiful.
There's only eight pet
Lucky
stores
paws.
In the whole state.
Huh?
There's only eight pet stores in the whole state that sell dogs. However, it's going to disallow selling dogs from breeders, from commercial breeders. And, you know, I wouldn't buy from a pet store, and we don't recommend it. Breeders have been against pet stores selling dogs forever. And cats. However, if you disallow it, it's going to open the rescue market. And we already know there's rescues purposely breeding dogs for the rescue trade. And we all already suspect that there's puppy mills in Mexico and other places that are breeding for this rescue trade.
Oh, really?
Yes, really.
Now, didn't you as a kid sing How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, we all did.
The one with the waggedy tail?
We all did. But it's going to be a problem.
So, Scott, in order to help you kind of think about it, and I could be totally wrong, but maybe at the next visit, I'll try to tally up how many spays and neuters are done by clinics that have a lesser price than what the Eugene Spay Clinic has.
That's pretty good. See
just what numbers we have. I know Green Hill does a lot. I know we do a lot. Wags does a lot. And I think that it's actually a service that has been there forever and still is there, and I think the impact would be fairly minor. If it was major, then I'll change my story.
Don't you remember about 12 years ago when the bureaucrats in Eugene wanted to quietly get rid of it and all hell broke loose?
No, I didn't.
Oh, they packed the city council chambers.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, well, and they backed off Prano in that one.
Advertised and pushed. There's instigators.
Well, there are. High volume, low cost spay neuter facilities other than the city of
Eugene. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what
WAG
I'm saying.
Is that's what they exist for.
Right. Yeah, right.
And I think CVC does a fair number of surgeries. And
I thought they closed down.
Well, not today, they're not, because they don't have a vet. Oh. But when
CVC,
they're operating.
CVC is referred to us a lot because they're not always open, and we're probably the next best game in town when it comes to general practice, and so we get a lot coming from them. But the reality is that, and you guys may not like this, I mean, you may hate this, but if a person has a budget of $50, these people frequently have a budget of zero, right? And so that becomes an issue. But if they have a budget of $100, it's amazing how you can stretch and find some old medicine that maybe would work and help. You know, you can fix an awful lot of stuff for $100, you know what I mean? And so the dilemma we get caught in is that there's tremendous numbers of people that have absolutely $0. And you get to deal with that all the time. People that, they don't really want to abandon their pet, but they truly have $0, and what do? Okay. And so I understand the need and sympathy and everything else involved in that. But they're still owned animals, and so you shouldn't be afraid to say that you do owned animals, you know, because there are a lot of people that have that need, and you'll probably take that over eventually. I'm sorry, you will, because I don't think with the current veterinary staffing, CVC will run. I don't think it can, okay? And so you're the automatic next best.
Have you encountered a crisis where low-income owners who are renters somehow move or whatever, and they can't bring their pet to the thing, and then they want to come to you, and they're all upset about it? I was reading one of our, when we were putting our report together, how this one humane society would have people come and actually talk to the landlord or the manager of rental apartments to see if they could work something out. Do you ever give counseling, or do you ever have a record, a roster of pet-friendly rental places?
We do on our website, and also printed at both of our shelter locations. We have a tremendous list of resources, both that includes local veterinarians, low-cost, no-cost clinics, pet-friendly rental agencies and locations.
And do people utilize those?
I think so.
When our original no-kill thing started out, I took packets of those around to specified apartment buildings and made presentations to managers as part of the outreach of that no kill.
Plus people game the system. I used to be married to a pediatrician, and she would sign letters saying it was an emotional support animal, they had to have it, and then the landlord couldn't do anything. They had to keep
they it. Have to let the animal in. The minute you say it's emotional support, they have to let it in.
You know, before we sign off, in terms of the grand strategy for increasing licenses, if in the files we had a study, we proposed a pet food tax, you may remember that, a county pet food tax, which would have generated well over $1 million, and it would have created all sorts of opportunities throughout the county. That didn't go anywhere. But Echo Northwest is this research firm, and they did a really big time study on it. There's a formula for quantifying how many dogs or cats are in Lane County. It may not be exact, but it deals with not only census figures, but pet food volume. And if you haven't really visited that recently, if there's a way for you to kind of take a look at that, if you ever have any spare time, to see what the gap would be between the universe of licensed animals now, dogs and cats, dogs, and the potential, because that would be the gap. And what percentage do you think right now of, quote, owned animals?
I remember seeing some figures, and I don't remember them off the top of my head.
But is it 40%?
I thought it was over 50%.
Yeah.
60%.
But I've campaigned for public officials for office, and this is just the area I was in, which might not be representative, but over 50% of the houses had pets.
Yeah.
Were they licensed, you mean? Or
no, I don't know.
What?
He was there for another reason.
So.
I think the biggest change that as a veterinarian that we've seen in the past, well, I've been doing this for 50 years now, so I've done it for a while, is the number of pets per household.
Yeah.
You know, we used to have everybody had one dog and maybe two cats, maybe no cats. Cats were the variable, you never know. But a lot of them had one dog.
Yeah.
A lot of people now have four dogs, and they're just a couple.
And that's why they don't license them. That's why they don't license them.
Well, I'm just
catch them.
I wasn't going there with it. I was just going with numbers. You know what I mean?
Well, I have a bunch, but they're all licensed.
Limit laws. Limit laws.
Now, outside the city limits, you can have all the animals you want for the most part.
No, you can't.
Well, that's true. But there's no limit on cats.
I'm licensed for eight. I can't have any more than eight.
But my point is that I think a lot of times we don't know how many individuals have. Because if you took my records and you said, okay, this client can only have four pets living where it lives, okay, living where they do, and you have six files, you know that they're not.
As you know, most of our time and the animal control officers are spent on abuse cases and neglect.
Yeah.
And when those,
which is where
when they get into the system, we just had one recently where a woman, we had been cited, and she got these animals removed, and now she wanted to get some pygmy goats for brush clearing, she said, on her farm. When we answered the judge and said, pygmy goats are no good for brush clearing anyway, so we just think she's trying to get a rank. She's a hoarder, and we got to make sure that She did not get these extra animals. So it's unfortunate that we can't go out and look for licenses and stuff like that, but all our effort is protecting the health and welfare of the animals and, you know, the people of the county. And so we, our limited resources are directed to the very worst cases.
Is there any way that in the paper you could put down county plans to do home inspections?
That's the way you drop the ball.
You just kind of make a suggestion.
You drop the ball by not telling people that you enforce it and that you're going after it.
We don't tell people we
enforce. That's the problem. If you did that, according to the Calgary model, if you did that, you'd increase your licensing. You'd also increase your licensing if you got rid of your limit laws, which you won't do.
Well, I think we're exhausting the
subject. We just went over the code.
That's true. Those are two things Calgary did. They let everybody know that if you're not licensed, you're going to get dinged for $250 if you get caught. That increased a lot.
We do that.
The other thing they did, no.
Well,
I don't
we don't go out looking for people.
When is it? When has it ever been in the paper or on the news? It hasn't been.
We put it.
That's part of the problem.
It's about neglect cases.
Another part of the problem is in Calgary. What they did, they got rid of their limit laws, and that also increased licensing. That's something else you won't do.
Well, we are increasing our licenses. There's a state requirement that we never have done, and we're looking to do now is rescues have to have licenses, which we
and
don't
you,
have
don't incur, you don't
we don't
do
have
that either.
We don't have that. We got to come up.
The
with
state
that.
Passed a law to do it.
We're working on it. We're going to have one.
When?
Well, I don't know. We got to get the lawyers to approve it and everything. Yeah. But we didn't even know it was a state requirement until I was reading the ORS.
You've known that for quite a while. It was Senate Bill 6 for several years. We've been talking about that.
We're going to get on it.
You know,
about time.
You know, when we had a friendly board, and I, from my perspective, we have one now, but 2011, 2010, we had the board basically persuade the, was it the assessor, to include a little thing about a license as a free call home for a dog without a dime kind of thing in the tax bills. And that went to 100,000 people or something, you know, where they just a light piece of paper. The more that people understand and are contacted, the more response we'll get.
It wasn't done right at the time.
What'd you say?
It wasn't done right at the time.
The inclusion?
It could have been better, yes.
Yeah.
And
well, then the board
your
changed
tax
and
bill
stopped
is the
it.
Best place to put out information asking for compliance.
That's what the tax assessor said, too.
Yeah.
They rejected it.
Yeah.
They tried to stop.
It wasn't the board that stopped it. It was the tax people down
it was the tax assessor.
No, they didn't want to do it, and they said, oh, no, that won't be good. Why don't you do a first-class letter?
Right.
That'll be better.
Yeah.
And so what we did on the budget committee, we said, I said, that's actually a good idea. Why don't we subtract that from the annual budget of the assessor to pay for that? No, we can put the thing in our budget.
I would like to ask for reporting on, you're talking about the rescues, how that's coming with the county.
Yeah.
Because I know you don't have the finances for it. You might need more office staff to handle that. And
well, we've just got to get it put into the Lane Code first.
I think
it's not there.
I see. Yeah.
And then we can start enforcing it. There's not that we've looked it up. There's not that many. I mean, there's a good number of rescues. A lot of them are just people at their house and like
there's fly-by nights.
Right. But we're hoping this will help weed them out because they advertise on social media. We have access to social media and we research it that way. That's how we enforce it.
The thing that we see coming down the pike is that everybody wants to have 4 chickens and 2 goats, okay? And they want a quarter acre lot. And that's where we're going to have more and more need for the Humane Society to give us a hand on how do we deal with that when we have issues with the goats and the chickens that are.
That's why they're building a new facility. That's why they're building a new facility.
Is there any, Sasha, from your perspective, is there any development or any condition in terms of the welfare of dogs and cats in the metropolitan areas of the county that we're not aware of, that some new anything that's cropped up that is of concern or is it just basically business as usual?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that we're seeing a trend here locally that's mirrored in several communities across the country in which the types of animals that are coming to the Humane Society tend to be to have received less or no veterinary care. They're under-socialized or less socialized than typical animals. Walking into our cattery 10 years ago, you would have seen the entire floor of cats full with social, friendly cats that can cohabitate with each other and were comfortable being around strangers. And both in the cats and the dogs, we've seen a shift. We think that it's in response to social media, and that it's much easier now on Facebook and Craigslist and those places. If you're a socially connected person and something happens, you have a baby or you lose your job or new pets don't get along and you need to rehome your animal, socially connected people are finding ways to do that without the animal shelters. What we're seeing here in our community as well as around the country is that shelters are now seeing those animals that are less connected from people that are less connected. And so there's, you know, a myriad of new housing adjustments that we need to make, specifically with the dogs, more space, and the cats, more separate areas, as opposed to the communal areas are big changes.
Well, thank you. Thanks for coming. Thanks to the staff. You're doing a good job. We didn't know about all that stuff. And we'll see you in a month, is that right? What's the date?
May 13th.
May 15th.
13th.
May 13th?
I seconded.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Matt.